Today on the Inside Flap.
By the way, just as an aside, I think the final resolution, the last episode of Murder, She Wrote, should have been the revelation that Jessica Fletcher has been a serial killer. She's been murdering all these people, framing everybody. Then the series makes sense.
Oh, that would make perfect sense.
Now I know why she's stumbling all over dead bodies. She's the source. My characters are in, you know, Kuala Lumpur. I got to make sure if they're going to Starbucks, I got to know where the Starbucks is at Kuala Lumpur. Because if I don't get that street address right, I'm going to get those one-star Amazon reviews. He didn't know where Starbucks was.
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast Inside Chat version, a very special Inside Chat version. I'm going to be dropping this one on Friday.
Didn't know you'd
Happy
get to hear
Friday,
us again.
Everybody. Wow. You did not know that, did you?
Did not.
No. My name is Dave Medicus. Welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my left is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. Thank you guys for joining us, and welcome to the show. This is
The Inside Chat.
That's right. We have a very special guest for you today. We are joined today by author James Rollins. We talked to him the other morning and had a fun chat with him. His new book is called The Last Odyssey. We'll talk to you about that in just a second. We'll have that conversation for you. What a nice guy and a
really
great
nice.
Talk.
Yeah.
A great, he's very engaging.
Best-selling author. And if you look him up on Goodreads, all of his books,
it's
people
amazing.
Love his books. I've never seen, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
So, to have written
all
so
of his
many books
are pretty much over 4 stars with tens of thousands of reviews each.
Unbelievable ratings that he gets for his book. And
well deserved.
Let's make sure to point that out. But you don't see that very often. We spend a lot of time looking at authors.
No, you really don't.
Looking at Goodreads, and you do not
see that. It's unusual.
The volume of books that he's written, just a great, and just to be such and so nice and friendly and just
so
had a
nice.
Great time talking with him. But we'll have that one
for
you.
He doesn't have to be nice.
Just a second. No, he could be a complete a-hole.
Yeah.
But he chooses not to be, I guess. Anyway, thanks for joining us. Want to tell you guys the funny thing that happened. So, you know, we were talking about been making some candles. We're making some candles.
I'm so over the candle making.
And yeah, I mean, a lot of white. Funny thing is, when you spill a half a tin can of melted wax on a stovetop, you can wipe it up fairly quickly with a paper towel when it's still hot and the stovetop is warm. But man, once that sets and I mean, I had to take out 2 of our electric coil burners and heat
not
them
to mention,
just
there
wax
are
everywhere.
And making candles, there's a lot of things that go into it, and it's all, we have a very small house.
Yeah.
We have a very small kitchen to go with this very small house.
Right.
And this stuff is just stacked.
Listen, you need
a
lot of supplies.
And I am
to make
a person
candles.
Who I'm shocker. I'm particular about the way things look, at least in the kitchen, because I like my kitchen. It's
sure.
pretty.
Yeah,
this is not pretty right now.
No, and the funny thing is that the more like today, even I'm in the hopes of finishing up the couple candles we had to finish up. I actually melted wax on the stovetop for half an hour, and then something came up and just had to put it right back where it came from. So we've got, you know, pots full of wax, tin cans full of wax, measuring cups.
You knew
with,
it.
With hardened wax in them, double boilers.
This is so
pans.
Weird. I don't have anywhere near the amount of work, business work that I normally do.
Yeah.
But I still can't manage to finish it. And I don't know what I'm doing with my time. Like, I really should just get my work done and then work on like my blog, my business, my website, my blah, 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 or just read a book. And I can't get any of that done.
So but the thing is with these candles, you know, when you melt the wax, every wow, you got to hit a certain temperature, mm-hmm. you know, like candy of the wax, just like candy making.
You've got the candy thermometer.
So, well, the,
permanently adhered.
The funny thing is, the other day, and when I was looking for it, and I said to you, I said, listen, do you know where the thermometer is? And your reaction immediately was, what do you mean? Why do you need a thermometer? Are you sick? Are you okay? As you're backpedaling furiously, trying to get the scurrying away from me, putting up the sign of the cross. Like, no, the candy thermometer.
Throwing salt over my shoulder just in case, knocking on wood.
Just trying.
Crossing myself multiple times.
Make some candles and throw some wax.
I actually got hot today.
You did.
And yeah. I had to scurry upstairs and check my temperature.
You did. We were all held our collective breaths for a few moments, and it turned out your temperature was low.
just a little low.
Just barely hanging alive. On to life. But, you know, I went for a run the other day, and I went up. Now, this is the last thing I expected. You know, a lot of people are out there, they're distracted, they're wearing their masks, they're doing what they need to do, they're keeping away from other people, even out there on the trail. Mm-hmm. But I went up one of my favorite trails, Mount Falcon Trail. You start from the bottom, and you can wend your way almost 1,500 vertical feet up
on
this trail.
Sounds like so much fun.
To get to these old ruins where
Why haven't I done that before?
This is an amazing trail to run because you get
beautiful
views.
You know what I like to do? I like to drive to the top and then wander around at the top.
Well, that's one
other
thing.
And then get back in my car and drive back down.
Because the great thing is, and you get views of Red Rocks, the park.
It's beautiful up there.
As you're running up it, and at the very top,
it's crowded.
There's the ruins of the
summer home.
The summer home of the guy who founded Red Rocks. I don't remember his name, but the ruins of the old mansion that he had up there, mm-hmm. and it's just a great stopping point. You get to the top, you look at the ruins, what I like to do when I get up there is I'll stop my watch, and I'll lean up against the fence that they have around, and just kind of look and just kind of meditate and take it all in. And, you know,
really?
The day.
Do you really do that?
1,000%. I absolutely do that, yes. Huh. And the other day, when I went up there, I chose to run up there because it was a cold day and I knew there weren't going to be a whole lot of people on the trail.
It's usually crowded, yeah.
Usually crowded, but when you get cold weather, you know, it keeps people away. So I knew it was going to be nice and didn't have to worry about seeing a lot of people. Well, as I was running up the trail and getting closer to the ruins, I heard, you know, kind of in the distance, I could hear the faint strains of some music.
Music.
Yeah, like this, like some kind of dance music going on. Huh. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And as I'm running.
Is it the fitness marshal?
The music is getting louder and louder and louder. It's not the fitness marshal. Okay. There's not a dance class going on.
If you guys
want
a great dance, you got to look up the fitness marshal.
Check out the fitness marshal.
Sylvia and I have been doing a lot of those.
But as I get up there, the music is getting louder and louder, and I'm going through this little pine forest to get there, and finally I get up there, and I'm getting angry. This is, you know, I'm out to run, I'm out to meditate,
you want to enjoy
I'm here to be
birds.
One with nature, and I'm hearing this music. I come around the corner, and right where the ruins are, there's this young couple, this guy and this girl in their probably early 20s, and he's got his backpack on, and this music is like blaring out of his backpack. She's drinking a beer.
Oh.
And they turn and look at me, and I just stopped. Oh. And I just stare at them.
You can be so rude sometimes, Dave.
Well, listen.
I've seen you be so rude.
I so badly. And this is. I feel like I'm in the right here. It's okay for me.
That's why you're rude.
Tell
is because
them,
you have a tendency to think you're in the right.
I'm justified.
I know.
But I could. This is what I did. I stopped and I stared at them, and then I continued to run. But they like were kind of standing. I went right in between them.
Dave.
And didn't even look at them. I just went straight ahead and just ran right in between them to get up to the ruins. And then when I got there, I kind of like looked back over my shoulder and gave them an angry glare. And they just stood there. She's drinking the beer. He's listening to the music. And they just stood there with a goofy smile on their faces. And they continued to enjoy their music. And I turned around, went back, cut between them again. No response from them. And I want it so bad. The second I passed them and I was running down the trail with every step, I was like, I should have said this. Why didn't I say this? Why didn't I tell them? What are you doing? Can you please turn? I could have been nice. I said nothing.
Were they the only two people up?
No, only two people out there.
And you're the jerk who comes panting and sweating in between them.
No, that's not the way I was looking at it. I mean, there were a few other people on the trail on my way up, but at the top, that was it. It was me and the two of them.
I don't like it when people play loud music while they're hiking. It happens a lot out here.
This is an ugly trend of people playing blaring music
on the hiking trail.
I know.
It's strange.
Yeah. It is. It is very strange.
Usually, too, at least when I've heard it, it's not a good song.
It's never a good song.
It's not a current pop song either. So I'm not like trying to be like, oh, I'm an old fuddy-duddy. I don't know what good music is. No, it's like a pop song from 10 years ago that wasn't that great when it came out.
And it's just noise.
It's not anything good.
Even if it was something good, when you're out on the trail communing with nature, there's no place to be blaring Billy Joel or whatever it is that you think is good.
Yeah. It was like a Smashing Pumpkin song from 1995 or something.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something that is good, something that you are going to want to pay attention to, is The Last Odyssey by James Rollins.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a hell of a good book for you. This is a great book.
And if you haven't written it, if you haven't read any James Rollins book, you're in for a treat because
The funny thing is, this is like number 15 or whatever in a Sigma series, but you could pick it up and
I have not read any of the Sigma series. Like,
you've never read any of his books.
It's so good.
You're diving right in. Oh, anyway, The Last Odyssey is a magical, intense, rollicking ride through the Mediterranean, replete with bronzed monsters, fire, and, well, something that seemed to be actually very prescient on the part of James Rollins, the end of times. This is an adventure story with history that comes to life in several different forms. But what I loved, and we talked with him about this, is how he is able to sneak in history, and you're learning history and in fascinating facts in the context of this great storytelling that he's doing. And you don't even realize that you're learning stuff, as you're reading it. For instance, this World War Zero. Have you ever heard of World War Zero before this book? Yeah, I had no idea.
Before this, I'd never heard of it.
No.
It was fascinating, though. And in fact, it was so fascinating, they actually went back and read it again just to be like, let me read that again.
Right.
Wait, what did I just read?
And this is one that you'll find yourselves Googling stuff that you read about. Wanting to learn more about it, you'll find yourself Googling the places that he describes in this book. Amazing! I just wanted a book, some plane tickets to. It just reads as a travelogue, as a history book, but more importantly, just as a great old fashioned adventure story. Mm-hmm. Which, how can you go wrong with that? It's so entertaining, really fascinating. This, we're talking about this World War Zero and how it allegedly brought the Bronze Age to a screeching halt, and these great civilizations that fell down by a strange, mysterious sea people. Oh, so, so good. This book takes the Sigma crew. Now, there's another book, as I said, in his very popular and entertaining Sigma series, on a mission to trace the route. And this is a part of it. They're tracing the route that Homer wrote about in the Odyssey, Odysseus' journey back home. And the gang eventually end at the gates of hell themselves. And man, when we say all hell breaks loose in this book, all hell breaks loose. Rollins has a great fun playing with ancient myths and monsters. Along the way, there is fabulous scenery. There are ship battles. There's ancient artifacts, torture scenes, double crosses, awesome monsters, and an ancient clockwork gold map created by, now here's some more interesting tidbits, the Banu Musa brothers, who I never heard of, but they're basically the Muslim world's equivalent of Leonardo da Vinci, these three 9th century Persian scholars known for their book of ingenious devices. Really just great stuff here. The book will have you up at night, finishing up, then early the next morning Googling what you read about. I love this book. I really enjoy talking to James Rollins. Laura and I chatted with him, and he is just the nicest guy ever and very funny. Really enjoyed this chat. We talked about his books, the research he does, his veterinary practice, and the one animal he refused to treat.
Mm-hmm.
Really funny story. So here he is, the wonderful James Rollins.
On the highway to hell,
you're scrambling, you're doing Facebook videos.
Because I came out on the 24th, and it was just watching my tour collapse around me for the weeks up to it. You know, I was supposed to do an event over in the Tucson Book Festival. You know, mm-hmm. that got canceled. I was supposed to be a keynote speaker at WonderCon in Anaheim. That got canceled. And bookstores, after bookstore began to, you know, close up shop and shutter, and they vanished. And eventually it's like, okay, we give up the ghost. You know, we'll try to do it all virtual as much as we can. So I thought, well, yay, it'll be a lot easier. I don't have to go on tour, and it's not a city a day, and but it's been so much more work.
I bet it has.
Well, at least, tour again. You know, wardrobe choices are easier, I'm guessing.
That is much easier. All my interviewers asked me, are you wearing pants? So I was watching last week with John Oliver on HBO.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And he has a segment called Now This, where he makes fun of like newscasters or, you know, people doing the same shtick over and over again.
Right. Yeah.
So the shtick was interviewers asking satellite guests, are you wearing pants?
Right. Yeah.
So I'm watching the show, and then there's my face pops up on screen.
Oh, no.
Jay Sacramento, where the interviewer asked me, you know, again, are you in pants? Hey, that's me.
Hang on, just one second while I make an edit to my questions here.
No. No, I'm just kidding.
That was not a question I was going to ask you.
Weird couple weeks, that's for sure.
Yeah,
it has. It's distressing, for sure. It's really distressing.
I did enjoy that video you made, though. I mean, you have what a crap ton of, if I can say crap ton, I don't know if I'm allowed to use that.
I don't care for it.
All those foreign editions of your books, how much fun is that to go through them and then try to figure out which book it is based on the cover and the foreign title? And that looks like...
Oftentimes I can't figure it out. The cover doesn't give me any clue.
Right.
You know, I did a fantasy series at one point, and the Russian cover came out and it had a big dragon breathing fire on it. Nowhere in my book did I have a dragon. That was what they chose for the cover. So sometimes it's not apparent. So usually what I'll do is I'll flip through, because I usually have a lot of art in my books, you know, little diagrams sketches or whatever. And so that I will recognize. I'll flip through and go, okay, that's the drawing. This is the book that they're referencing.
I see.
Sometimes there's no clue. There's no, not even on the copyright page do they reveal what that volume is. That's so right. I have to sort of piece it together.
It's really
funny.
It's
like a little puzzle.
You into a little Google Translate? You ever have to revert to Google Translate?
No, I haven't. I have not fallen to. I mean, I've done Google Translate for books, which is usually horribly wrong. So, you know, if you've ever done Google Translate, it's not always that accurate.
No, it's overly formal and awkward. Yeah.
That's true. Well, listen, I absolutely loved your book, The Last Odyssey.
Well, thank you.
Dude, this is so good. So good. Equal parts travel, adventure, history lesson, and monster movie. This book, it really sucked me in. It kept me up late at night, had me forgetting all about this raging pandemic. And so I thank you for that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
My goal when I was writing that was I wanted to be like a book version of those old George Pal Sinbad movies, you know. So my goal was to try to, you know, just make a crazy Mediterranean adventure just full of insanity.
Well, I do curse you for one thing, is that now the first thing I want to do was buy some plane tickets to the Mediterranean, but clearly I'm not going anywhere.
That's my goal. You know, no one can travel nowadays, so you know, this is their version of an armchair vacation.
Yeah.
As best they can manage.
And the adventure is so exciting. Just for me, it was helpful just to step away from CNN, mm-hmm. the New York Times, all this stuff, and just read your book. And just being enthralled at this world. So I also
my goal is, you know, I am no, I have no aspirations to be a literary. I will never win any literary awards. My goal is pure escape fiction. I want to entertain you.
Want
to build biggest roller coaster I can and send my readers on this, you know, twisty turny. You know, John across the Mediterranean. I want to get them out of, you know, out of their head, out of this world. You know, then, you know, if I can, you know, in the course of doing that, make them think about a few things, then all the better. But my main goal, though, is just to entertain.
Well, a job well done with The Last Odyssey. Now, I loved you guys some fascinating bits about how there's different cultures and how they shared these apocalyptic end of time beliefs.
Right.
What were some of the interesting versions of end of times beliefs that you came across in your research?
I don't know if they were so unusual as that there seemed to be some commonality.
Yeah, commonality.
That everybody seems to have whether you look at Islamic faith or Judaism or Christian faith, they have a lot of similarities that they all seem to be pointing towards the same direction. Mm-hmm. And, they mix and match the characters a little bit. Even in Islamic mythology, their end world belief is that Christ will return, even in the Islamic version. But in Islam, Jesus is a prophet, and he basically sides with Muslims against Christian when he returns to the world, which I found sort of interesting. Oh. That, mm-hmm. They're taking the same beliefs that are sort of ingrained in modern Western civilization, but just, taking it from a different angle, which I just found really interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
It is really interesting, but let me ask you this. Why hell?
Because I knew I just at some point wanted to send Sigma Force to hell.
You just wanted to write the line, "I've been to hell and back again." Come on, that was
that is my goal. Your viewers, and I know this is all audio, but if you look over here, there's a stack of silver metal files over there.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I have that's my idea generator.
Wow.
Where I collect all historical tidbits and scientific things that might become books. And somewhere in there was, just one blank sheet of paper saying, "I'm going to send Sigma to hell." So didn't know how I was going to do it, didn't know what context it was going to be. But then I had read about even though I always wanted to be a veterinarian growing up, I also wanted to be an archaeologist. So, a lot of my books deal with archaeology and ancient civilizations. And so I, keep my, ear a little bit to that, to what's going on in archaeology. I'd read about this armchair archaeologist, Robert Biddlestone, who through just looking at Google Maps and reading clues in Homer's Odysseys and using all the geological tools, believed he had discovered where the true location of Ithaca, the hometown of Odysseus, was. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that was interesting. And for the longest time, everybody thought about Troy was a mythic place. And then in the late 19th century, again, another armchair archaeologist. I don't know what the archaeologists are doing. All these armchair archaeologists
out for them. Get out of that armchair, for God's sake.
The true location of Troy. So all of a sudden, Troy had a real place.
Uh-huh.
And so the beginning of Odysseus' journey, where he leaves Troy after the war, is a real place. Where Odysseus ends up getting to his hometown of Ithaca is a real place. So then I'm thinking, well, what else could be real in between there? So that got me thinking, and then I was looking about, at one point in Odysseus' journey, he goes and visits the gates of Tartarus, the Greek version of hell. Mm-hmm. Ah.
I like it. There you go. The link.
Maybe the gates of hell are real somewhere, and I'm going to send Sigma Force through those gates. So that was how that came about.
Well,
that's awesome.
Yeah, job well done. It was a journey well spent. I was happy to take the ride along with him, for sure.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. And in your book, you also talk about major innovations that come about after war, times of war, like movies and different television and stuff like that. And then We're currently living in a little bit of a war zone right now. Do you think we will see any artistic or scientific achievement when all this is said and done?
I do. Case in point is that the normal pathway to a vaccine for coronavirus has always been, anywhere from 5 to 7 years for a vaccine to really come out. But now they're using innovative techniques. They're leaning on, like, Bill Gates's approach, seven different companies to challenge them. Can they, who's the fastest that can bring a safe vaccine for coronavirus to the marketplace? And in the meantime, then he's spending, $1 billion preparing seven different factories based on the research of these seven different companies to try to accelerate that process. So I think in that, we're going to see great innovation. Everybody says, why are we going to space? Why are we sending people to the moon to collect a few rocks that are, maybe it's scientific interest, but what practicality is there to that? But there are so many in the process of getting to the moon, all the innovation and things that will need to be learned and developed and engineered to accomplish that, had many practical applications in real life.
Yeah.
So I think even in this case, we're going to see, a retuning of A, number one, a refocus on maybe we need to pay more attention to these animal reservoirs of viruses, mm-hmm. and be prepared rather than being reactionary.
Yeah.
We should be forward thinking. Mm-hmm. So even just that alone, I think, is a big step forward in protecting us in the future.
Yeah,
it's a hard lesson to learn, but hopefully we'll learn it. Hopefully we'll get new technologies that can fast track our production of vaccines or innovative drug cocktails that will take care of this.
Absolutely. And then too, just thinking about the people who maybe might have the ability to write a book that would never have gotten written, or dream about making a movie that maybe wouldn't have gotten seen, or just sure. all different kinds of things that are what is possible now rather than what isn't possible, I suppose. Kind of yep. interesting.
Or maybe we just don't have to shake hands anymore. I mean, maybe that's all there is. Who knows? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out.
I just read Dr. Fauci was saying that he was saying, from here on out, we should do a lot more we should be hand washing obsessively.
Yeah.
And we should probably never be shaking hands again. So maybe you're right. Maybe that will become something we don't do anymore.
That's
right.
True. Fist bumps from now on.
Certainly the cheek to cheek kissing. I mean, when we lived in New York, sometimes I'd get attacked by people having to do this cheek. It was so awkward. I'm hoping that's over with now, because I really never got used to that.
I think the world is fundamentally going to change. I think this is such a traumatic event that there's no way there can't be repercussions that are going to last forever.
Yeah.
Yep. Listen, you also have some really great monsters in this book. You got some campfire crustaceans, you've got blazing bulls, and just a plethora of pyromaniac. I know.
You messed that up.
A plethora of pyromaniacal brutes at the end of your book, which I don't want to spoil. Do you have any like favorite monsters from books or movies? Are you a big monster guy?
I lean back on those old Sinbad movies, to me, one of my goals was I had gone to a museum in Florence, Italy, and they had a shield of the statue of Medusa's head. Mm. I put it on my Facebook page; people can check it out there. And I thought, it just looks so awesome. I thought, I want to bring Medusa to life in my book. There's a brief scene where Medusa appears, in the book, and so that was one of my goals, was just to.
It was great.
I love mythology. I love Roman mythology. So for me to be able to play in that sandbox, to bring some of those monstrous creatures to life on the page, it was great.
Yeah, you did it really well. I mean, you played a lot. You played hard and you played well.
I always tell whenever I teach writing, which I do occasionally, is I always tell writers, you should write from a point of passion. You should write what you love to read. So when I'm writing those scenes at the end, hopefully as thrilled as my readers were of just
good.
Creating these crazy creatures.
Yeah.
So when you were a kid, were you, how did you find entrance into things like the Odyssey or the Greek gods and goddesses and that type of thing? Was there a teacher or somebody, or how'd that happen?
I don't know if it's one particular person. Is that, I grew up reading a lot, and not just one genre. I read a lot of fantasy, science fiction, horror. But I was always fascinated with Greek and Roman mythology. You get that assignment, you always get some point in your elementary school years where teacher says, go home, write an essay about what you want to be when you grow up. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was a point of moral dilemma for the third grade version of myself. I remember sitting down there, blank sheet paper in front of me, knew I wanted to be a veterinarian from third grade.
Oh, wow.
Just didn't know how to spell it.
I still don't know how to spell it.
I went and got the dictionary and looked it up in third grade so I can actually put veterinarian down there. But second in that list was archaeologist.
So
so at some point that was always an interest of mine. I don't know exactly why.
That's it. That's funny.
Now, The Last Odyssey is another entry in your Sigma series. So let me ask you this. What is the best and the worst thing about writing a series?
Series. My publishers wanted me to do a series for a long period of time. And all my early work were standalone thrillers. Mm-hmm. And I kept telling them, no, I don't want to do a series. I don't want to do a series. No, I have problems with series in general. And it's from what I call the Jessica Fletcher syndrome. Remember Jessica Fletcher from Murder, She Wrote?
Yep.
I don't know what is wrong with that old lady from Cabot Cove that she's always tripping over dead bodies. I've never tripped over a dead body.
I know, me neither. I keep trying, but
so eventually you begin to you know, it defies your suspension of disbelief. Mm-hmm. Why is this woman always stumbling over dead body? By the way, just as a side, I think the final resolution, the last episode of Murder, She Wrote, should have been the revelation that Jessica Fletcher has been a serial killer. She's been murdering all these people, framing everybody. Then the series makes sense.
Oh, that would make perfect sense.
Now I know why she's stumbling all over dead bodies. She's the source.
Oh, I love that. It was always the person, too, that you would least suspect. Mm. So you can immediately figure out who it was by looking to...
Who don't they think it is?
That's yes.
The person it is.
Yes.
The other problem with the series also is it's hard to maintain jeopardy.
Yeah.
Because let's say somebody puts a gun against Jessica Fletcher's head in an episode. You know that trigger, as much as you might want to get pulled, never gets pulled. Because you know she's in next week's episode. So you're not threatened by that. So I just had a problem with that. And then I wrote a book called Sandstorm. I always call it sort of the prequel into the Sigma universe, because I wrote that as a standalone. I did not think it was the beginning of a series. Sigma Force appears in that series. The director of Sigma, Painter Crow, was just a field agent still at that point in the storyline. And when I finished that book, I thought that was a sort of a fun group of characters. I'm sort of sorry I'm saying goodbye to them.
Ah.
And I realized, oh, wait a second. What if I built a series around a group of characters rather than an individual? Therefore, the jeopardy can come from many different directions.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I can maintain the danger and the threat to the characters because I can knock off a major character, which I've done in the past, because Sigma can always recruit somebody new. So nobody is necessarily safe in my universe, so I can stop jeopardy. So that was the way I got around that. In regards to what's fun about a series, which I didn't really realize until I was well into the series, is that when it's in a single volume, you only live a short span of those characters' lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, generally most thrillers take place maybe in a week, maybe even shorter. And that's all you get to see of them. Whereas with the series, the characters change and grow. At the beginning of the series, Commander Gray Pierce meets Seishan, femme fatale, Asian assassin. They both shoot each other. 18 books later, they're married, they're having kids. And it's hard to pull that off in one book.
It takes
18 books to make that arc. So with a series, you get to explore the full range of these characters' lives.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned you wanted to be a veterinarian. You got to live out that dream. So let me ask you this. If you're the expert, what's better, a dog or a cat? Settle an argument here in this household.
There's no argument.
Dog guy or cat guy?
I'm not being facetious. I like them both. I've got two dogs, but I always had a hospital cat.
I've
always loved cats. My dogs I had the back when I had the cats. They were cat chasers. They were rescues, and they just did not like cats. So I couldn't keep cats in the household. But I had a hospital cat named Tucker. He was a great matter of fact, I named one of my characters in my series after the cat.
Aww, but
Chuck was a great cat. He wandered into my clinic like the third day I opened. It was a little strip mall clinic. Clients were coming in, and this cat just wanders in the front door. He was a young, intact male cat. And I thought, well, he's friendly. He's not feral. So he belongs to somebody. So I posted ads, and a month went by. Nobody ever claimed him. I thought, well, okay, I need a hospital cat, so I'll do the hospital cat. We use them as blood donors. I think Tucker was used as a blood donor once for the 15 years I had that clinic.
Oh.
It was my excuse just to have a hospital cat. And so I neutered him, kept him. He was a great cat. He would fetch, you ball up piece of paper, he would fetch them. So I finally stepped away as my career became more shifted towards books. I began to wean myself off the clinic. When I finally fully stepped away from the clinic, Tucker passed away that same day.
Oh, wow.
So he entered the third day, opened the clinic,
and
passed away the day that I left the clinic.
So that's interesting.
For some reason, destined to be in that clinic.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
Yes, I love cats. Even though I have two dogs,
yeah,
I'm not going to disparage cats.
Well, I think the better question would be animals or people then, because...
that's a simple question.
Yeah, it is a simple question.
Give me that four-legged curtain.
But there had to be like the animal, like when you saw an owner coming in from the walking through the parking lot and he's got what in his hand that you just said, "Oh no, I'm not here today," and you shutter your blinds.
I went to the University of Missouri Columbia, so we were training both large animals and small animals. My practice was about 70% small animals, 30% exotics. So I was one of the two veterinarians that handled birds and small pocket pets. Tarantulas.
Oh.
Somebody once brought in a tarantula that had lice.
No.
I don't know how to keep lice on a tarantula. There's something wrong when you have insects on top of insects.
Oh, that is
like,
wrong.
It's like, nope, that's not for me.
That is so
strange.
Here's
a can of Raid. Good luck.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I saw the little creepy thing about spiders. I am not a fan of the whole spider.
No.
But you've eaten, I think I saw on your website, you've eaten fried
tarantulas. Yes.
Fried tarantulas, yeah.
Yep. A delicacy. They're not. They're horrible.
They do not taste like chicken.
Any way whatsoever.
Oh, wow. That was really brave.
Yeah. Do you... You've been binge watching. I saw on Twitter your dog's been watching a lot of dog TV. What have you been binging nowadays?
Binging. What I'm watching right now, I literally just started last night, about halfway through the first season, is a Spanish language film on Netflix called Money Heist.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah, we started that one. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Yeah. Really good. I mean, the first episode is the typical heist sort of storyline, but then it gets more and more intense as each episode progresses. I don't know what they're doing, how they have four seasons of that series.
We've just seen the first one.
Tiger King, because I have to watch Tiger King.
What are your thoughts on that?
Him for his care of his tigers.
Yeah.
So.
We have some of his tigers in Colorado right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched The Kingdom. It's a South Korean zombie series.
Oh, that sounds good.
Really?
It's okay. Really too.
That sounds really good. One.
But you do have a lot of books on your website that you recommend. And I saw, which caught my eye, Dan Simmons' Carry and Comfort on there. And that is one of my all-time favorite lists.
I got a signed copy on my...
Do you really?
Yeah, the books I have in my library where there's special books that mean something special to me.
Uh-huh.
And so I've got a signed first edition of Song of Cali by Dan Simmons and Carry and Comfort by Dan Simmons. Song of Cali is to me, was still one of the most horrific novels I've ever read. I mean, I almost was sick to my stomach when I finished that book. Carrying Comfort, I think what's best about that is, again, maybe I don't want to ruin anything, but, halfway, a quarter of the way through, they kill the main character off. It's like,
right?
Oh, yeah. They're never going to kill us. He's really dead.
Dan, you write in a couple of different genres yourself. Dan Simmons, he writes in all kinds of different genres. So is that something you always write in fantasy as well as,
I've always done two books a year since the beginning of my career. It's always been a thriller and something else.
Wow.
So I've done a couple of fantasy series as that something else. I've done a middle school series. I've done, co-wrote a horror series with another author. So I think if I did the staccato paced thriller after a staccato paced thriller, especially two a year, I think I'd get burnt out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And readers, I think, have a good nose when an author is sort of bored with their own material.
Right.
I never want to get to that point. Mm-hmm. I want to be as excited about what I'm writing, hopefully, as the readers are that are reading it. And what helps me, I think, is to jump and stretch my literary legs and try something different.
Yeah. The research that you must put into these books is impressive, because when you like reading this adventure novel that has such a historical and like just peppered with like facts and interesting tidbits and stuff like that, I don't ever feel like someone's lecturing me. It's just there with the story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great gift that you have.
I'm always scared of info dumping making you have to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
So it is sort of a balancing act to do that, and I love to research, and it is a fault of a lot of other authors that were, I've done the research, I'm going to make you read it.
Sure.
Too bad you're going to read it.
Yeah.
I remember when I wrote a book called The Black Order. It was like the second or, what was it? I don't know, second or third Sigma novel. I should know, but I don't. One of the early Sigma novels. And to get the ending of the book, my readers had to know the basics of quantum mechanics. So how am I going to pull this off?
Wow.
So my first draft was like a 20-page dissertation about, you know, quantum entanglement and, you know, Schrodinger's cat and the double slit test. And my editor goes, you know, Jim, you can't stop up for 20 pages and give a science lecture. You know, you've got to shorten it down. I said, well, listen, how short should it be? You got to do it in 3 pages. 3 pages? She says, yeah. So I'm thinking, listen, can I use pictures? And she goes, yes, you can use pictures. Because, you know, pictures are worth 1,000 words.
Sure,
so
yeah.
3 or 4 pictures, I can get rid of 3 or 4,000 words. So in the middle of Black Order, there is a 3-page explanation of the basics of quantum mechanics. And afterwards, I get a lot of notes still from like
high school students.
I never understood quantum mechanics until I read Black Order.
Oh, wow. Hey.
That's awesome.
How about that?
It's challenging.
Yeah.
I'm a high school teacher. So if we ever get back to school, I'll bring in your book and take it down to the business classroom and say, look, kids, right here. This is going to save you a semester of work. How long do you do the research part of it before you start writing the book?
You know, it never really stops. But there's what I call a big research with the capital B, capital R. The big research is where I'm exploring the historical mystery in the book. I'm exploring the scientific topics. I'm calling the people that are willing to talk to me, scientists, archaeologists, historians, whoever I can get on the phone. And I have to limit myself to 90 days because I found that if I don't have a limit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That I will continue to research thinking I'm working, no, I'm playing at a certain point. So
sure.
On the 91st day, I actually have to start putting words on paper.
Oh, wow.
Now, of course, every day I have to do more research because every, you know, every page has something I have to double check to make sure it's correct. You know, mm-hmm. if my characters are in, you know, Kuala Lumpur, I got to make sure if they're going to Starbucks, I got to know where the Starbucks is at Kuala Lumpur, because if I don't get that street address right, I'm going to get those one-star Amazon reviews. He didn't know where Starbucks was. But it's important to get those, what I call telling details correct. If you get enough telling details correct, so if I put Starbucks at the correct intersection in Kuala Lumpur, and somebody's been to Kuala Lumpur and goes, oh my gosh, that's actually where Starbucks is. They're going to believe anything I write after that.
That's true. You know, that is true.
If I have telepathic marsupial creatures that live underneath Antarctica, of course they're real.
So,
because he knew where Starbucks was.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. That's a great point.
It's an effective little tool of us writers is to convince you of enough real facts that when we take you somewhere weird, you're gonna fall for it a little bit.
And some politicians as well.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we really want to thank you so much for spending a little time talking about your great book, The Last Odyssey. We really appreciate it. And we'll be watching you. Looks like you're doing a live signing tonight. Is that right?
Doing live signing for Premier Collectibles, and another live signing for a bookstore that's been real supportive of me, Poison Pen, out in Arizona.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a couple live events coming up Thursday and Friday.
Cool. Well,
and I'm sure I'll do more after that.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I've got to do something. There's only so many zombie shows I can watch.
That's true.
Probably.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, listen, thanks so much. We keep telling everybody to read your book. So good, so good. Mm-hmm. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for the support.
Yeah,
thank you,
of course, man. Thank you.
Have a good rest of your day.
You too.
All right.
Bye.
The Inside Fly. Oh, what a guy. Wasn't that a
that was
great
fantastic.
Conversation? So great.
So, yeah. Dave.
Yes.
Do you want to know? Let's take a guess.
Okay.
How many Starbucks do you think there are in Kuala Lumpur?
Oh, yeah.
Because I looked it up.
Well, oh, good, good, good. Man, there must be, I don't know, thousands. No, I wouldn't say it. Kuala Lumpur.
Thousands.
I'll say 10.
20. At least 20.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so when he's
thousands.
Talking about placing the right Starbucks on the right corner
yeah.
of the right intersection in
like
Kuala Lumpur.
If you look it up, they're all kind of lined up in a line there.
Wasn't there an amazing race pit stop in Kuala Lumpur?
Oh, Dave, that's how would I know that? I never watch reality show TV.
No. We never do that.
Never.
All right. Anyway, thanks to James Rollins so much for stopping by. We really enjoyed that chat. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate it. And we appreciate you guys listening. Thanks so much for stopping by. Hope you enjoyed it. Go out and get that book, The Last Odyssey. Damn, that's an entertainment. I mean, that's just good old-fashioned entertainment is what that is. That is a nice, nice book for you right there. Some great escapism. All right. That's our show for this week, our special Inside Chat edition. We'll see you again on Sunday. We have our regular show with book recommendations.
And Danielle Trussoni.
Danielle Trussoni, yep. So we'll see you then.
Adios.
I knew I just at some point wanted to send Sigma Force to hell.